Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros.
Welcome back to another edition of Leading the Ring. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. Hey, a lot of things to talk about in boxing. I guess the number one thing we got to mention, and it's what, 420 today. So Gabriel tweeted out how glorious the smell is over there in San Francisco. Not over here in Modesto, bro. We got nothing but manure that all we can sniff on and stuff.
Oh,
but
man.
Over there, you take walking the streets of San Francisco, you're having many, many clouds of smoke, man. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing great. I took a long walk through San Francisco.
Came back
tricky.
Home really high. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I didn't have to bring anything with me. It was just like waves of it hitting you, you know. But, I mean, you know, at the same time, it's like, it always drives me crazy seeing 420 people, and they're littering everywhere, and you're seeing trash all through my beautiful park there, Golden Gate Park. And you know, it's like, dude, give weed a good name. Like, it's the turning point right now. We got, like, half the country, you know, is about to have legalized pot, some of it recreational, some of it medicinal. And don't give it a bad name by being a jerk. Don't
right.
act like the alcohol guys, you know. But, you know, they're kids, so what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? What are you going to do here, man?
Put
you
your
know,
hippies and kids.
Anyways, fight fans, you want to call in? 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring. Let's open it up with Spence Jr., having a total domination of Chris Algeria. Now, the win to me was something to really talk about it, but to really talk about. But here's one thing that a lot of fight fans did really took notice, and those are the iced up nipples. I don't know if you saw that, Gabriel, but I was sent pictures from Gmail,
oh, yeah.
from Twitter, from Facebook about the nipples. Now, you know, here's a show. We're a show that's been talking about PEDs and the usage of ACH and testosterone for how many years now? I think our anniversary just passed in March. We didn't even mention this, but I think we've been on the air for like 8-9 years. I'm not even quite sure. It might even be 7 years. I'm not sure. I think it's 8 though. And we've been the guys that have been the advocates of talking about these situations. And now we're starting to take the notice that fans out there in the social media, or fans that are not even on social media, are taking notice of things that we would normally pick up on. Let me ask you, what is your thoughts about the icy nipples here? What do you think?
I'd like more info. You know,
let me ask you this, okay? Let me ask you this, because we had polymyalgia on a couple years back, okay? And everybody knows this already, that with us and polymyalgia, we're not the greatest of friends. We don't communicate with each other. There's a lot of back and forth when it comes to you, him, and also with me. Me and him have had it out behind the scene, and we've talked and everything else. But he came on, and he was an avid – I mean, this guy was pounding at the table of how Floyd was doing this and TMT. And then I pointed out to him on the show, but what about these things? What about them getting popped? And how come there was no press release? And why are you not talking about – he got really silent about that. And fans are pointing that out right now, Gabriel, that the TMT crew, I think is what, four or maybe even five guys – have been caught with VATA or another agency under PEDs or HGH. I mean, this is kind of funny here. This is an organization or a promotional group that hasn't been the cleanest and hasn't been so truthful about things.
Well, it's, you know, and they said after that rash of positives happened at their gym, J. Leon Love and Mickey Bay, and let's be clear, you know, I mean, Lamont Peterson joined Al Heyman's crew after, but you could throw Andre Berto into that mix. It's another Al Heyman fighter that's tested positive. But particularly the TMT crew, like you're pointing out with Floyd. I mean, after that happened, people did go to, you know, Floyd on the, I think it was the Canelo tour, and Leonard Ellerbe was saying, well, we're going to do 365, 24/7, you know, year-round testing, Olympic-style testing with USADA, with a whole stable.
Right.
I haven't seen that happen.
No.
And there's no evidence
no.
that any of these guys, if any of them were legitimately doing a 365 program like VADA's, and they weren't, this is the thing, is that Floyd has always played word games. And I think he's learned from Bob Arum. He learned from Al Heyman. And so there's a lot of word games that happen. Olympic-style testing doesn't mean anything, especially considering when you talk to people and they say that are in the industry, in the anti-doping business, and they say Olympic testing isn't great. There's a lot. They don't do CIR on every sample. They don't test for EPO on everybody's sample. It's still a small sample size that they actually do test, and they don't do the strictest testing on each one. Otherwise, they'd probably
right.
catch more people. But it's still, it's the same game. It's that money game. It's like we want to get the money for testing, but we don't want to obliterate sport. So, you know, they play fast and loose. They call it the deterrent strategy, when really it's just the keeping sport going and us getting checks strategy. So when you look at the TMT thing, you're absolutely right. I mean, Pauly came on. You know, I'm a guy that's known for being talkative and will assert my point. If you listen to that interview, I'm really quiet. Pauly won't shut the hell up. And he thinks he knows a lot. He doesn't know much. He might know some things behind the scenes, but he has not brought any of that to light. So he has no room to stand on when he attacked you and I or any other journalist. But he, when you brought it up to him, what was his answer? Was, oh, well, it was a diuretic. So
well,
it was a big deal.
Well, you're right. That's what he said and stuff. But okay,
yeah,
so
and he blew me off rather than making a point, and which was
exactly,
you know, those two things. Mickey Bay, you know, he was going to sue those guys, didn't sue those guys. I don't know what happened. He stopped communicating with me. I still will receive his calls if he wants to reach out. But he got a shot, just like Lamont Peterson got a pellet in his ass from the, you know, Desert Oasis Clinic, that somebody at his gym told him to go there and they'll fix you up. You're not feeling well. They gave him some shot and he test positive with this huge TE ratio thing. And I've said this for a long time, that all those anti-aging clinics, and Floyd's guy had 24 of them, Don Hale, at one
mm-hmm.
point. You're going
right.
to tell me that Mickey Bay, off a random tip, went to the Las Vegas clinic, but Floyd and his mystery three positives never visited. He even told me he went to one of Don Hale's himself, without me asking, to one of Don Hale's clinics, and then tacked on to it, you know, the hair loss replacement. And that was a word game that Hale was playing. Changing it from hair loss recovery.
But you know what? Here's the thing. Here's the thing, Gary. Right. But here's the thing. Like you said, there's no need to throw shade on Spence because we don't have the information. But it is something that fans are talking about. But let's kind of shy away from that.
I mean, I got hit with a bunch of, you know, people reaching out in that field. Like I'm not going to say the number because I never like to reveal what the sources are. But
mm-hmm.
it wasn't just – I mean, fans came late to that. And, you know, when people like that, they're reaching out
oh, yeah.
to point it out.
It was right before the fight. I mean, I think a couple of days. Even I got it. And you know
yeah.
what I mean? Me and you talked about it. Before, I mean, we never said nothing about it on Twitter or any social media. This was a conversation that we had together before anybody
privately.
Was talking about it. But
yeah.
I think with the light that I see right now, and the reason I'm bringing it up right now is because we didn't bring it up. The people out
right.
there that are watching the sport, they're starting to open up their eyes. Because remember, we were told by many folks in the business and outside the business, meaning the fans of the sport, that we were on a witch hunt. And now things are this. But like I said, hey, let's not throw any shade on Spence. Because I got to tell you this. I like what I saw from the kid. I want to talk about what he did on Saturday night against Chris Algeria. I think that's something right now, subject that we need to talk about. But I did want to mention about the icy nipples. That was a question thing, and I didn't want to shy away from that conversation because of the fact that folks are going to be like, well, wait a minute. You guys were the ones that used to talk about this and point things out. You guys are not going to do this anymore? And you went on your hiatus. I went on mine, and you said it before I did. You said, well, you know what? We're always pointing this out. When is somebody else going to? And I think I'm happy to see, finally, Gabriel, I think you're happy as well, to see that there's people out there that are taking notice of things that we did at one time.
Well, I'm kind of happy and I'm kind of not, because I don't. It drives me crazy that there were so many people that tried to tell me how to do it right, like Mike Woods, who's a moron. If he was more polite, more people would care. That has nothing to do with the. You know, that has nothing to do with anything. Because Mike Woods is nice. What issues does he push forward? And more to that, why isn't there like a definitive piece written on Tarver Cunningham and the testing that debacle that went on there? Like, you know, people will dog me for the long articles I wrote. Maybe I took a, you know, whatever. But they're in detail.
They were long, and bro. I'm still reading them right now. You know, they were
but
long.
But I can tell you what time, when
right.
people were tested, who asked for the testing, how it came about. More often than not, the stories contain that information. I don't know if Algieri Spence was a test fight. So for me to, you know, I can't say, well,
that's the question.
Dude, it's just a picture.
Right.
Because, you know, and then point to the good testing. Because USADA's testing, I don't know if it's USADA or IDTM, they have proven to be untrustworthy in their relationship with Al Heyman. So, yeah, I can't trust it. But the bottom line is this, Dave, is that you and I are being good about this. We can talk about it in that people brought it up to us, but there's no evidence to suggest, other than those pictures and what people think of them, the guy did was dirty. Same thing with Manny Pacquiao. You can look at those performances, but where was the evidence? It bothers me. Why it's come back around is because Pacquiao has retired, or says that he's retired, and he's getting knockdowns at the end of his career when he's being tested greater than anybody's ever been tested in the sport. And nobody's turning around and saying, well, wait a minute. Why isn't this? If him getting knockouts of three different guys, of Cotto Hatton and De La Hoya, you know, if we're going to just say all that is evidence, then why can't the knockdowns be evidence that maybe he wasn't juicing ever? That's what
the fact that was that Freddie Roach was a very good matchmaker. Anyways,
yes.
My fans, 347-215-7598. Spence, where does he go from here? Chris Algieria, I thought he dominated. I thought he did a lot of things that a lot of us thought that he was going to win. Okay, we just didn't know what kind of fashion, and we didn't know where. You know, I said this last week. I said, hey, listen. If he beats Algeria, we're going to know more or less, should he move up, or is he one of those guys who's going to have problems and still has to go back to the drawing board? Also, there's a lot of talk about, you know, Anthony Joshua right now. Who does he face next? He's talking about coming back in June, and a couple of the names are two guys that belong to Al Heyman. But we got a lot of calls right now, Gabriel. So we open up the lines real quick before we proceed and talk about more about boxing, what's happening on the sport. You want to hear what some fans got to say about maybe the icy nipples?
Let's weigh in some people about it, and let's talk some nipples.
Okay, let's go with the area code 61. Wait, let me see. 650. You're on live right now. Leave the ring. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, I didn't know anything about the icy nipples. I called for something else.
What do you got, brother? What do you want to talk about?
You got the bonus
point. You guys would know this more than me, but I just watched Mikey Garcia spar on Periscope with a super middleweight from San Francisco at Robert Garcia's gym in Oxnard.
Uh-huh.
And man, did he ever look rusty and slow and pretty bad. And
right.
I don't know. I don't know the culture of the gym.
Let me ask you this. And you're surprised about that?
Well, I would think that he at least stayed in somewhat of decent shape, you know, over the years when he wasn't fighting. But
right.
Did anybody else see this? And is it possible for a guy to get that out of shape and become that bad? And, Gabe, do you know who this kid was from San Francisco, the super middleweight? Because he looked good.
No, I'll find out. I'll get a bit of a scouting report. I missed that sparring session. I'll have to go back and look at it.
You know what, Gabriel? I saw it because somebody sent me and asked me if I was going to watch it. And I got to say this, okay? First off, you're talking about Mikey Garcia, a guy that has said from the beginning of his career, before most guys were labeling him pound for pound or one of the greats and stuff, that he didn't want to be in boxing. He wanted to be a police officer. Does it surprise me that this guy didn't have to have the work ethic of trying to proceed having a boxing career? Absolutely not. What surprises me that he's still trying to be a fighter when he told the whole world, I don't want to be a fighter. This is not what I want. I'm being forced into this because of my family tradition.
I think the
I'm
money
not surprised
he made
about it.
He didn't work out, you know,
exactly.
and nothing drains the money you saved, like suing Bob Arum, I imagine.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised he's out of shape. I mean, you know, fighting's tough, man, and to stay at that level, like there's being in fighting shape, and then there's, and Dave, you fought amateur. There's being in shape, because I still love to train. I'm 43. There's like a limit, you know, and then there's being like ready to be, ready to spar, ready to fight. It's just a
right.
different level, and it's hard to stay at that level. You burn your body out. Maybe the rest will be good for him, but also, you know, it's not like they seem like fitness freaks up at that gym. Robert Garcia's fighters regularly miss weight. He looks 10 years older than he actually is. You know, I mean, it's not like, you know, they're staying in shape year round seems to be like a habit around there.
Yeah.
Look at Brandon Rios.
Hey, yeah, right. Just one more quick question, you guys. I know you guys aren't a big fan of the PBC, but man, that matchmaker, whoever it is putting together some great fights. And that
oh
fight,
man, we're going to talk
that,
about that.
That card last night was epic.
You know what?
I told this.
I called up Gabriel. Let me tell you this first off, really quick. I called up Gabriel today and I said, Gabe, did you watch the toe to toe Tuesday night fights? He goes, no. I said, dude, you got to watch it. I'm telling you right now. I almost felt like I was watching Tuesday night USA fights.
Right. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah. It was fun. And even under – look, even the Spence in Algeria, dude, let's admit it. Those were good fights. Cunningham was
yeah. –
I mean, what's his name? Marcus Doodoo Brown. Dude, he shitted all over the card. He didn't do anything. He just, like, he left a crappy feel to all of us that we all had to go to the restroom after and wipe our asses. But everybody else did a great performance. You know what I mean? And Tuesday, even though, let me tell you this. When you put, and here's the thing with boxing fans, you know, and some folks used to hit me on like, you guys complain about the PBC. It's not the complaint of we got to see spectacular fights. What we need to see is competitive fights. Because Tuesday night...
And compelling.
Compelling. Because Tuesday night was not this, like, you know, these top A-grade fighters that stepped in the ring. What we saw were two guys get in the ring that had enough to beat one another if they were competitive.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we want to watch, competitive fights. That's what draws us to sit down and go, holy shit. And let me tell you this. I watched it on DVR, bro. I didn't watch it live because
yeah.
I was too busy on my Xbox One playing Division with my son. And then after we were done, I go, okay. I saw Steve Kim and I saw a bunch of people tweeting about it. I was like, all right, let's see if this is really holding up to the hype. God, I stayed up till 1 in the morning watching the fights. And I was like, holy shit. These were good competitive fights. Yeah, love
well,
it.
So I guess my question is this. Okay, so you guys, you know, most it seems like a lot of the boxing journalists would like to see BBC go away, for whatever reason. I don't know. It doesn't matter to me. But is the matchmaker? Who is the matchmaker for PBC?
Mm-hmm.
And who would you put in this place? Who would you replace PBC with?
I think the matchmakers change depending on the region, you know, who's the main event, all that stuff. As I understand it, and it may be restructuring, as Steve Kim tweeted, he heard from a good source today, they let 50 PBC employees go just to take some time off, and we'll let you know when to come back, which is kind of a strange thing to hear from your boss. It seems to me that the matchmaker, and this is just me shooting in the dark, but it would change with depending on the promoter. The promoter doesn't get every slot. As I understand it, Al or his people in Integrated Sports, which is the middleman administrative wing, they call the promoter, say it's Lou DiBella, and say, look, you know, we're going to do this fight, maybe 2-3 fights on this card. We're going to give you 3 slots on the card and then fill out maybe if there's a total of 7 or something. But he'll get a certain amount, but he's also told what the fight is. And then it goes from there. So you know, I'm not sure if there's one sole matchmaker, if it's multiple, if they all work together. It's hard to say, but they have gotten better. I think the thing that I would like to see from PBC, if my big criticism is that they, the rest of the sport's not involved. So how can you call it premier if it doesn't involve everybody? And why shouldn't it involve everybody? And I think it's an interesting try, but it just looking at the drug testing program, I think it's a fail. But, you know, it's kind of early to tell. They haven't spent all their money yet.
Well, here's the thing. To answer his question, too, what other who else would you like to see that takes over the PBC? We're already seeing it. Because here's the fact of the matter. There's other promoters involved in the group. And we're seeing their matchmaking. I don't necessarily think it's the PBC. You know, you got Greg Cohan, Lou DiBella, Warrior, all these other guys that also are involved in this. So I think it's the tail end of Heyman now kind of letting them do their thing. Let them do their job and let them do their matchmaking. And we're starting to get better fights. So I think that's the turn here. And I've always said this from the beginning. This is Al Heyman. He did what he wanted to do, make his money. And he sees that it's his way of weaving himself out of the sport and leaving it to somebody else, building the brand so somebody else buys it. I see that happening. Let's pass in on another fight fan over here on Leaving the Ring, Gabriel. Let's go with area code 812. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, what's up, guys? It's your boy Joe from Indiana.
Joe, what's going on, brother? How you doing, man?
Good. Hey, real quick, on a side note, Gabe, when I talked to you Monday, Steve, about the tickets, man, I went ahead and purchased my I got my ticket for the Thurman Porter fight, man. I went ahead and got it. Yeah, I got it. I paid a hefty penny. I paid a hefty penny for it, but they're good center view seats. So it was going to be four seats, but I've – go ahead.
You know, you can't take anything away from you, man. That is what a real boxing fan does. They do support the sport. They're not trying to undermine anybody. And you know, the value of a good deal. It's like, screw it. I actually think it could be a good fight. You know, it could end up being tough to watch, but we'll see. You know, and
I
like a little center and a little bit raised myself.
It's
a great spot.
You know what, Gabriel? This is the kind of guy you just got to sit back and clap for, because he's the reason why the sport stays alive. You know, goes out, works his ass off, pays for a ticket, regardless of what people are saying, regardless of what's going on around the sport, he's going to support it no matter what. I mean, we've always said this. You know, fight fans are like abused wives. We just don't know when to give up and leave and stuff. And I'm one of them, you're one of them, and he's one of them. So, hey, Joe, congratulations, bro. Happy
Thanks
for you going down to that fight, man.
Thanks, man.
You know?
I'm excited. I can't wait. But going, got a few questions here. I'm actually real excited about the Golovkin fight this week, man. I mean, I just feel like he's gaining. He's like the momentum train is just running wild for him right now. And I think after each performance, he's going to get better. But out of the two fighters between him and Chuck Lupito, who do you think is going to have like a more impactful or more like meaningful performance this week? I mean, I expect both of them guys to win, but you think it's both by knockout?
Well, you know, it's hard to be impressive knocking somebody out that nobody knows.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird, you know? I think with Chocolatito, I think depending on how the fight goes, people are going to have more respect for that win, because McWilliams, Arroyo may not be like, you know, the tippity top, but he's up there. He's respectable.
He's durable.
He's bulky or hard to find. Yeah, he's durable. He's even potentially dangerous. So I think that's probably the better fight. You know, Wade can only go up. His stock can only rise in this fight. To me, I mean, nobody really knows anything about the guy. If he does kind of good or better than expected, I think people are going to be, you know, thinking good things about him if he can go the distance and end the knockout streak.
Yeah, well, one last question, guys. I got two more quick ones real quick. I know you got another caller. But, Dave, I wanted to ask you, what out of the fights over this past weekend, which one was the one that really caught your attention the most out of all the fights that were on this weekend?
I got to tell
you,
dude, Cunningham, I'm going to tell you now, the one that made me stand up, even though Soto Carras, that fight was great. But, you know, the thing about Cunningham is that, dude, that guy's chin makes good fights. He gets dropped. He's got great endurance. He gets right back up. And he puts up a good fight, you know. He's a ship. You just can't sink. He's named after a ship. You know, the USSR, you know, whatever, USSA, whatever. But this guy just doesn't go away. You have to give him his props. How much longer does he have in the fight game? I mean, you see that big old welt in the side of his face. That was a big concern that we've seen with other fighters from Holyfield, even with Blackwell. You got to start looking into his age and the fact that he does take a lot of abuse to his body and his face. But, guys, he's one of the dudes right now that you got to sit back and go, he is a warrior. He doesn't carry a very big punch. He doesn't have all the skills in the world. But, dude, he's got a dog in him that doesn't let up. He just doesn't. When he bites, he holds on. That was one of the ones that I thought for sure that it really impressed me because I thought Cunningham, that's it. You can't do this again, Cunningham. You just can't do it. And he keeps showing us he can get right back up and he can fight his ass off. He may not be winning, but he sure the hell can fight his ass off, man. So I was impressed.
That was a fun card. Overall, I really liked that card. The Soto Carras card. Spence Algieri, I really liked. I mean, I really wanted to know where the kid is at, and I think – you know, he's still not facing punchers. But I think he's doing all the right things. I mean, you could see the Pacquiao fans get incensed because, what Errol is doing is not just in the ring taking Floyd's mantle, but you can see him taking little bits of it in the press and saying that Pacquiao doesn't have any fundamentals. And of course, everybody gets incensed and everybody goes to write stuff. He knows how the game is played. And to me, his poise at this point, you know, I think maybe that moment in the Olympics was really great for him. I'd really be curious to ask him about it now, or maybe in a few fights after he wins a title, because it was a moment where he let his mental game down. You know, he could have had a chance to compete for a medal. He did. But mentally,
right,
he'd already lost, and it checked out, and he just couldn't get back up again. And, you know, and you could see him now. He's a very smart guy, has such great poise in the ring. He's looking to be aggressive. For him to land the shots that he did and put Algieri out, you have to respect it, you know. But at the same time, he got Algieri after all those other guys. So it's not – and I think even a boxer knows it's not fair to say, well, Pacquiao didn't do this, and that's why, you know. I mean, it's just kind of like, come on, man. Every fight's different. Every fight matchup is different.
Every fight is different.
The kid is just so on point. I think Cunningham needs to be retired. He's getting to a dangerous place, getting knocked down so much. He's given us all of it. We can do him the favor of not letting him fight into, brain damageville. There wasn't any one fight. I mean, JSK versus Kamagai was the fight I was looking forward to the most. But honestly, once I realized nobody was getting knocked out, it kind of just turned into white noise. A lot of punches, but nothing really great. I mean, it was fun.
But still very entertaining. Yeah, I was going to say, still very, very entertaining. But see, the thing that stood out with me with Cunningham is this, dude. Is like you said, this is a guy that's been, the last of days already is there for him. But for him not to let go, I mean, me and you talked about this earlier today about our age. We were talking about, we may think we're still in our 20s, but the reality is we're not. We're in our 40s. For Cunningham to still believe that he's still in his 20s to rise back up and be competitive. He had the younger warrior, which is what's his name?
Wolacki.
Yeah, Wolacki. To sit there. Wolacki. I mean, even Wolacki had that look on his face like, are you serious? Like, you're getting back up. You're going to take the best punches I'm giving you. And Wolacki, you got to give it to Wolacki. He didn't stop trying. You know what I mean? I mean, he had a potential guy that was folding. He was falling apart. And I go back again, Gable. The big welt on the side of his head, to me, was a telling to stop the fight. We don't want to see one of these tracks, especially on an older fighter. You know, Ludo Bella was excited. What a warrior. What a heart. I was like, what a balls. What a heart. What everything else. If anything, Cunningham walked away with more fans than he's had in a long time, but they should have been there again. And I mean, trust me, I was a fan. I was a fan already, but sitting down to watch the fight, I was sitting there going, okay, this guy can't do it again. There's no way he's going to get dropped and get right back up and be competitive. And he was. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598 here on Leaving the Ring Radio with your host, Bernie Man Montoya and Never Snitch 97 Rough. Let's pass this to Fight fans really quick here. Area code 323. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind, brother?
Just listening, guys. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, man.
You know what's fun? It was actually ended up being my favorite of the weekend. It can count for us, you know, the Tuesday night fight. I loved that Kyron Davis Jr. Castillo fight. You know, two undefeated guys. That
Dude,
was really compelling.
Good fight,
man. Oh my God.
Good fight.
And like,
yep.
Castillo finally started getting that left home. Kind of an awkward guy, you know, the way when you'd let both hands go, he'd kind of bring his feet with him and a little bit awkward, but you could see the will and the determination. Boxing is just so, I don't know, in this last year or so, as I've been stepping away from the sport a little bit, but, you know, watching these guys up in the gym and watching
I think what we missed.
I've been reading a lot. I see it different now. And
right.
Oh, I was just,
but,
I
but
just
Gabe,
really
Gabe,
loved it.
Gabe, I think this is what we've missed. Between me and you, this is what we've missed. And I think a lot of fight fans have missed this as well. It's, okay, you get two guys, they're very well matched, okay? And then what happens is you see one guy, it's not a major adjustment. It's a minor adjustment that works.
Right.
And then the other guy decides, hey, I'm going to adjust to what you just did. And it starts being very competitive where you're sitting there going, okay, who's going to take the frontal? Who's going to take it to the next level and may take
right.
over the fight? And that's what I enjoyed. That's what I was sitting there going, holy shit. Okay, I didn't want to get up because, you know, and I'm telling you now, for the past two, maybe 3 years, I'll get up and go take a piss or I'll get up and grab a beer. When I wasn't that kind of guy, I would sit there through every second to every minute of the round and not wait till the round ended. And I jumped up, ran, even if I fell flat on my face because I've been drinking all day, fell flat on my face, jumped up, grabbed the beer, came right back, sat back under the couch just so that I wouldn't miss anything. And then I told everybody to shut the hell up because I wanted to listen to every punch being landed. Because I, for some reason in my head, Gabe, I'm thinking like I can register what was going on by each punch being landed because the sound told me what was happening next. Which
made
no sense,
all of
but...
it. You know, you gotta watch everything. It's like watching a game of chess. You know, and you got to see it all. And that was one of the things I noticed about the card. I really liked interviewing Andre Rozier. I've only interviewed him a few times, talked with him a few times in person. But he's a great boxing mind. And this has a way of articulating it that has no ego about what he's telling you. This is it, you know. And so I was enjoying listening to him, listening to Danny Garcia. And the announcer, I didn't know his name, but the thing that was driving me crazy, though, was that they get excited about, like, one punch landed. Like, they didn't know how to value each punch yet. You know, like, Rozier does and Garcia, but the announcer was just like, he'd go crazy, like, there was something changing. And I'm like, did I miss something? And, like, no, he's just excited for no reason. But other than that, I thought, like, what you brought up, competitive, and I say compelling. What was compelling was, even in the Red Catch fight, the main event, you had the mental game. Like you're saying, there was like a physical adjustment and then kind of pressure on the guy that was winning to kind of keep it up and deal with that adjustment and then switch. You know, in like the Kyron Davis and Castillo fight was the same way. Castillo was starting to come on and then Davis was like, I felt like I was winning. I need to figure out a way to turn things back, and he just couldn't. He's got a young trainer in Steven Edwards who's trying to, you know, jockey him across the line. It was great TV. And it was exactly what I used to love about it. And as I stepped away from the sport, and I don't owe anybody two interviews a week and a fight report and all that stuff, the trappings of the, you know, of journalism, you know, boxing writing, and I can really just watch the fights again. All this other stuff doesn't mean shit to me. You know, what did Canelo say, or Oscar's latest stance on Canelo versus Triple G, which is a fight that's just fiction at this point. Who gives a shit what people think about it? You know, they both have fights scheduled. All that stuff is just superfluous, and what really matters is what happens when the bell rings. I'm kind of like rediscovering my love for the sport, I guess is what I'm saying, because I was a little burned out on it. And the PBC wasn't helping with just keeping on filler fights. All, and, now they're trying to bring me some real shit. And now I like
Exactly. And here's the thing that when you hear people say, like, you know, there's a lot of writers, a lot of people in doing podcasts that want to see the PBC die or just fail. Like, they're hoping they're going to fail, but no, I don't. I didn't want to see the fail. What I was trying to point out, I'm speaking for myself, is what I wanted to point out what the PBC was doing, that the format that they were – and I talked about this numerous times on Leaving the Ring – was that they were paying networks a shitload of money for production, not asking networks to have a commitment. So networks were absolutely saying, oh, yeah, go ahead, put boxing on. So it made whatever budget you were thinking that they were getting, okay, because they're going to pay their main star, who they thought was going to become a star, this shitload of money. So when it came to the B side, they gave them an X amount of dollars without even investigating it, because all they were thinking about was getting it on TV. It wasn't about getting it being competitive.
Right.
And we may be seeing the tail end of the fact that the money – it may be shallowing up. And guess what, guys? We may be the guys that go, at the end of the day, go, shit, the PBC is finally getting it. They're finally catching on to what we've been talking about. The end of days, though, might be near to something. They could have had something great and fantastic. But the fact was, is you had a bunch of guys, bunch of investors that were not boxing fans. They were trying to do it on a business model. And I hate to tell you this, but not every sport can be designed as a business model. Not every sport can be football, baseball, soccer,
right,
hockey. Boxing has its own way of breathing, has its own way of living.
Well,
you ever heard that? Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, you ever heard the expression, you can't contain nature, you can't keep it in the bottle? Boxing, to me, is a lot of that way. You just can't do that. You can't stop a man from being a champion. You can't stop a man from rising to the top. You can't stop a man of saying, I'm going to fight against the odds and beat the odds. You just can't do it. In other sports where, it, in terms of teams, you can do that. Because it only takes one or two or three guys to foul it up. In boxing, it's not like that. I'm sorry. And that's why I love this sport. We talked about that earlier. I grew up in a household full of my older brother, Mike, okay? My brother Mike, dude, is a – you know, this guy's a basketball historian. My uncle's Raider fans. Just, you know, they love the sport. Other uncle, hockey, you name it. Other uncle, NASCAR, golf. And people go, man, you know, you don't – watch any other sport. And I said, you know what? I couldn't relate to those other sports because I was an individual. When I was growing up in school, I used to like to fight. That was my thing. I used to like to fight. I got in the boxing gym. I liked to fight. That was the only way I identified with things. And the reason why is because it took one person to say, hey, I'm going to do it. I'm going to accomplish without anybody else. So even though you have a team, I'm not saying that you don't have a coach and nobody else, but just saying because that one person has to follow through with the instructions. And we're witnessing that, you know, we witness that right now. You know, you get matchmaking, you get it right, guess what? You get magic. It becomes Disney. I like that.
Fights make fights. Fights sell fights, you know? I mean, that's the bottom line, is that all last year, I mean, it was just endless B-sides. I felt like I was watching a bunch of free pay-per-views, you know? It was just, this is not why I watched the sport.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like, what is this? And I think you're right, you know, in that, you know, the real boxing people wouldn't have let Al do this. You know, and the networks did the same damn thing for whatever reason. I don't know what the incentive was. Well, I've heard rumors of what the incentive was for Kerry Davis, who really is.
Right. Yeah.
Could credit him with creating Al Haymon in the sense that he let him through the door. You know, maybe it was kickbacks. Maybe it was perks. Who knows? You know, maybe it was promise of future employment. We've seen that in Al's wake. But you know, you have to look at.
Well, Al had, you know, Al too. Right, but Al had too. He had a list of celebrities that was intriguing, and he could make money off as well. That's what I heard as well. You know what I mean? So there, I mean, there's a lot of variables of why what
the
he did.
HBO
exactly.
Well, I think he leveraged like any good talent broker does, which is really what he is. He uses talent as his commodity. You know, but it's. I think the thing though, you know, what I've noticed in the sport, you see this with Roc Nation. I remember the guys that were PEMG, or I think it was PEMG, the guys that were taking over Zab Judah's career for a minute, or the many people that have invested in Zab Judah's career, when he was a title holder. Guys that have not been around this game up close, have not been in and watched with cold, you know, dispassion, a sparring session, where it's a quiet room, and everybody's just kind of watching it like it's normal. Those guys get excited around the fight game, and they invest money, and they think that their guy's the best guy because they don't understand that you always like the guy that you're watching. Everybody looks great in the gym, you know, until you understand the subtleties of it. And so I think that's what happened with Al. He had a bunch of guys that they thought all these fights were great, and the announcers are like, oh, this is epic, because they're never around fight. So any fight is exciting to them. And we're taking over the sport, and it probably felt that way, you know, buying all these dates. But the bottom line is that the product has to be good, you know? I mean, it's why I don't really listen to a lot of, like, the people that win the Grammys. I think their music's horrible, you know? And it's just you keep mass marketing something, I guess people will buy it. That doesn't mean it's good.
Right.
So I hope this year is about substance, and that it isn't just more, you know, another Transformers sequel. You know, that's garbage, but people have, it has name recognition in boxing so that people will fucking buy it.
Here's the good thing about boxing, okay? When it comes versus to music and movie industry, those guys have endless money to continue to push, you know, crap in your face. With boxing, we don't have that. It's not there. And you're seeing that. You know, at the end of the day, you're going to end up seeing good fights. And we've been waiting for that. We've been sitting back and waiting for these type of fights to happen. You know, and I want to keep seeing this, you know. I think the fights right now that we're seeing happen that are being produced or even talked about are a lot better fights than we had just a year ago. So let's talk a little bit about some unrealistic fights that are going to happen this year. And this is what I mean, you know, unless there's a drought. And what I mean by drought. Yeah, my phone's blowing up like crazy.
Somebody's asking you for the link.
Yeah, I got a couple of folks asking me for the link. Let me ask you about this, okay? Because Danny Garcia was awesome. He was a commentator for Tuesday night fights. And Jesse Vargas put on Twitter saying, hey, let's make this fight happen. They're both welterweights. Jesse Vargas has a title. Danny Garcia is trying to make – he's trying to be established welterweight. Does that fight make sense? Absolutely, guys. That fight makes all the sense in the world. But here's the thing.
Which fight?
Danny Garcia and Jesse Vargas. It makes all the sense. But here's the thing is that, you know, going off of what Jesse Vargas did with Saddam Ali, okay, if anybody knows how to keep in-house fights, it's Bob Arum. And I was talking to Felipe Leon about this, and Felipe made a great point. He goes, look, in order to make Jesse Vargas and Timothy Bradley, it's got to go pay-per-view because they can't afford Timothy Bradley on regular HBO. So if I was Bob Arum, I would say, hey, you know what? Buy Jesse Vargas off of me for $3 million to $5 million. And then you can have him, and he can fight Danny Garcia. Because of the fact is that if he was to make Vargas versus Bradley again, and Bradley beats him, well, he's no value. There's no value anymore for him. And I was like, yeah, that's true. Absolutely true. But I think the gamble is this, is how many times. Here's two. Well, there's two things for me, Gabriel, and you can argue with me about this, or you can agree with me on this one. Here's two things. Two things with that. Jesse Vargas, I'm sorry, let me go back. Timothy Bradley's chin getting dropped twice by Manny Pacquiao. The first one wasn't that, like, oh, wow, man, here, that saps concern. But the second time, dude, he got dropped. And it might be because of the training, what Teddy Atlas was doing, or it just could be blatantly because of the fact that his chin is just no longer that durable. Because we talked about this the week of Timothy Bradley versus Manny Pacquiao, is that no matter how many times you hit the chin, it can be durable. At one point, though, the dent is going to suck in, and it's just going to be there. So to sit there and think that Jesse Vargas can't beat Timothy Bradley, I think that's a major gamble. To me, it's a 50-50 toss. Just because the fact that Jesse Vargas kind of got a boost of confidence, knowing they could hurt him on the 12th round, boost of confidence that he was finally able to hurt somebody at the welterweight division and get the TKO, and he's a champion now. Whereas Timothy Bradley, well, he's coming off a loss. And a major loss where most folks thought he was going to win. So do you sell him out and give him to the PBC and say, yeah, go right ahead, because you don't think you can make money off of Jesse Vargas because he's not a very likable character in terms of what fight fans? Or do you keep him and say, no, I'm going to make the Timothy Bradley fight? I tend to think that because Bob Arum doesn't really like Al Haymon, and how many times have we seen Bob Arum do things on emotional standards? That fight just doesn't happen.
Which got tweeted by Bonnet's Mark Erosian, who asks, did you guys already talk nipples yet?
I say yes. You want to call in? Let's talk about
it.
Man.
We did briefly.
We're supposed to have Luis Garcia come on in a few minutes here and talk about helping, what's his name, Amir Khan, move up and wait. I think that's an interesting topic there to talk to him about a little bit, you know?
Well, I'm curious with Vonis, too.
I like to speak, you know, does Vonis want to come on really quick? I like to talk to Vonis really quick. You know, I mean, he's fighting the guy right now twice. This is the second time rematch with, Lawrence that nobody wanted to fight. Even to a point where a guy that everybody says that he's being avoided, Gennady Golovkin, and he's stepping in, fighting the guy, Gennady, and his people are not really even talking about. Hey, Dornier's fighting. I don't know if you guys remember that. Nonino Dornier.
Yeah.
He's also a Bear
fighter.
Isn't
that kind of strange? Zolt Berdak, he's fighting this weekend. Nobody's talking about that. No,
here's a guy that, yeah, it's crazy, right? Here's a guy that most people were labeling as the next Manny Pacquiao, that most media, yeah, most media was clapping. You remember, Gabriel, do you remember this when people were calling me haters of Nonito Dornier because I was questioning the fact that I didn't think he was a real fighter because the way he was acting?
Right.
Do you remember that? You remember that? And I keep calling him out on that to the point where he wouldn't even come on and leave the ring anymore. And guess what? Nobody's talking about him.
Yeah, I haven't seen that kind of turnaround. It's pretty staggering how fast he's fallen. You know, from an HBO level fighter to a guy fighting overseas, fighter of the year, to getting blanked against Rigo.
You know who did that at one time to get their career back on track? Juan Rama Marquez. Do you remember that? And he lost his fight
when
he went overseas. You remember that? And that was
That's
not
right.
because It was also because of bad management from Nacho Bernstein, because Nacho Bernstein was trying to be the manager and trainer at the same time, didn't know what he was really doing, and he made Juan Manuel Marquez go overseas, lose, and then come back.
Yeah, it was bad. There was a period there where people just talked about what a bad manager Nacho is.
Well, I mean, not just a bad manager, because everybody wrote him off, though. Remember that. Everybody wrote off Marquez.
Oh, yeah.
Marquez went over there. And then the fact was that – and here's the thing, though. I don't even think Nacho and Bernstein thought that this was – I don't even think this was even the plan, bro, because they were looking for a title. But the fact is that a bad thing happened that ended up being a good thing, because Juan Manuel Marquez went over there, lost. When he came back and scheduled a fight, which I can't remember who was next on the line, who he scheduled with, everybody tuned in to see, was Marquez really shot? Was he done? And he got more. He got some good viewerships.
That was a funny fight too, but in that
I'm trying to remember, who was it? Yeah, he gets
and
a loss.
It's really like a disputed loss. Why am I blanking? Chris John.
I know. I'm trying to remember. It wasn't. Chris John, who was an
over in
Indonesia.
Fighter. Yeah.
Indonesia.
Yeah.
And then who did he come back to?
Well,
to
he fought one of my all-time favorite names, Turd Sack Cookie Jim, in Mont Blue Resort Casino in Nevada. That was for the interim WBO featherweight title. And then he came back against Jim Rack's Jocka, which was a pretty bloody fight, as I recall. Knocked that dude out. And then Barrera was next from Marquez. But yeah, the loss,
which was a pay-per-view fight. Which was a pay-per-view fight, too. Yep.
Right.
I remember that.
And I wonder, you know, it's maybe that fight did open things up for him. It's probably accurate. Is Luis Garcia coming on, or are you just still going to – are you texting him?
He's going to come on at 7:30. I don't know if we're going to be on that for that long. Let me ask you this real quick. Joshua Anthony, so Dominic Brazil, and let me see. They're trying to think of the other name that they're thinking about having him. Oh, they're thinking about having him in with oh, my God. The kid that beat Chris Oriella,
Bermain Stavern,
which is with Don Keen. Out of the two, who do you think is going to go? Oh, who do you think they're going to pick?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a tough one. I mean, you really want to come back with Bermain Stavern, but at the same time, you know, because that's a tough opponent. But he's been off for a while.
That's a validate opponent, though. That's an opponent right now that, if anything, if there's questions of if he's going up the ladder, that's the ladder you want to go. Where Dominic Brazil, I don't know, man. I'm watching him. And I'm like, this is a guy that's a step back. This is the guy you're supposed to test yourself before you go for the title. Because Dominic hasn't done anything yet.
Yeah, no, I think if Al just wants to, you know, get a payday, he feeds in Brazil. Stavern, you know, I mean, you're going to go rounds. You're going to go quality rounds, I think, especially as he warms up and if he finds anything. I mean, you know, they're still developing Joshua. Now they've got a nice shield. They can look at the mandatories and decide how they want, you know, to they can map out their year now.
If I got a percentage out of Anthony, Joshua, if I'm Al Heyman, okay, and I'm looking at it, you know, from every corner, because I only get a percentage out of this guy. The full percentage who I do get off of is Dante Wilder, who beat Stavern, right? I don't want him anywhere near Brazil. Because that's his fighter. He gets 100% off of that guy. You put him in. Back in with Stavern. You put Joshua in with Stavern. Because that's a tougher fight. That's a bigger fight. So if I'm looking for a second fight with Stavern, who has a title, and make it a big more a much bigger money fight because the fact that he beat, you know, Anthony in his first defense, that's the route I'm going to take. It's not the right the route that we want, but that's the business route that I would take. But then again, I'm not Al Heyman. But that's what I'm looking at. I'm like, okay, hey, if I'm going to do things, this is where I'm going to go. This is the route.
Well, I mean, you know, luckily for them, they have the belt now. So they're only beholden to fight who the IBF says they are. Everything else is up to them. And I think when you have a fighter that doesn't even have 20 fights yet, you know, Anthony Joshua, and you know he's basically a franchise waiting to happen, I just wouldn't rush things, you know. I think you just leave it. You slowly, you know, you don't move to any fight that you don't have to. And any fight that you do make, you better make sure that you're going to win, and you just get him experience, you know. That's how it is anyway,
yeah.
You know. And I think it's smart. I mean, you know, with four belts, you can do that. You can just develop your champion as a champion, which is insane to me, but, you know, that's how it is now.
Okay, really quick, before we go off the air, because we got a couple of minutes and stuff like that, I don't think we're going to wait until 7:30 for Luis to get on, man. I don't think we have enough to talk about. Really, really quick, Dominic Wade, Kennedy Golovkin, who's your pick? Why do you think? Me, in my honest opinion, Dominic Wade, he can have whoever with him, it's just not going to happen. He doesn't show he has a jab. He's got height. He doesn't know how to use it. Conditioning, you can have, and I said this earlier, you can have the greatest conditioning in the world. But if you don't have the skill to keep off a guy that has better skills than you, it just doesn't work. But this is boxing. Things can surprise us. I just don't see this with Dominic Wade. Dominic Wade, I mean, no, here's the thing. Steve Kim, one of his articles on UCN Live, he posted out, Gennady Golovkin is not looking past Dominic Wade. And my question is, why not? We all are.
Well,
that
I mean,
shows
I think.
You. Go ahead. What are you going to say?
Well, Vanna Smart-Rosen just tweeted back, I'm still waiting to get tested. I haven't been tested once. So, we know Lara Martin-Rosen, too, doesn't have testing. But to your point, to this fight, you know, I watched the tape of Dominic Wade. There is nothing about his game that says he's going to win this fight. I mean, he, like you said, his punching frame is kind of wide open. He keeps the lead hand a little too low, brings it back a little too slow. He's not a physical fighter. He's not really that quick of foot, so he's not going to be hard to find. That's not really too much of his game, you know, running around the ring. He moves enough. It's just kind of average, and he's going to get pounded out. It's amazing that they've sold as many tickets as they have, and the forum is going to be rocking. And so, you know, Golovkin's arrived as a gate attraction, even to the point where I saw somebody say, I'm going to the Ortiz-Berto 2 fight because it's a startup center. It's cheaper. This fight's a little high priced for my liking. And, you know, I mean, to see him fight somebody that we know he's going to beat, yeah, I mean, you know, I can understand the consumer not wanting to see that. I don't, you know, I traveled for the Stevens fight because I felt there was danger. And it was New York, and it was cool. But, you know, I mean, this, L.A.'s not that far, and I'm sure I could get a good seat for a Golovkin fight. I have just no interest to travel for any of these opponents just yet. But I got Golovkin by
That's because you don't like – here, listen. There's another sport, Gabriel, that people enjoy and people love, which is the matador putting a sword into a bull. We all know the ending to that. But Dominic Wade is not no bull. This is putting the sword into a pigeon. Into a pigeon.
He's not really even a matador.
He's not, you know.
He's got problems.
The last time I said that something was not going to be very competitive was back when Marcos Maidana stepped in with Eric Morales, I believe. And I was like, look, this is crazy for Eric Morales to come back. He's been in retirement. Yeah, he had a couple fights. There's just no way. He's a murderous puncher. But here's the thing was that I completely forgot, and I need to slap myself for it. Morales has skills. He's been a fighter for a very long time. Dominic Wade, just like Gennady Golovkin said, I know nothing about him. We know nothing about Dominic. And what I've watched was that Sam Soliman was able to close the distance and a much taller guy clinch with them, punch him. Guys, what do you think Gennady's going to do to him? Dominic's got to have a perfect game. The only people that are rooting for Dominic Wade are the people that are close to him and don't see what's outside of what Dominic does, meaning his girlfriend, his close friends, his mother, his father, his cousins, second cousins. I don't even think his third cousins are going like, yeah, he's going to win. Maybe even I might be stretching it out. Even his first cousins are probably saying, yeah, he ain't going to win this one. I just don't see this happening. But if he does, Gabriel, where do we rate this at? If he does the upset, where do we put this at?
It's one of the greatest upsets of all time if he pulls it off. But, you know, he's not pulling it off.
If he does, okay. Greatest upsets of all time. Let's put that in perspective. Greatest of upsets of all time. Mike Tyson, Holyfield, Mike Tyson, Buster Douglas, Hopkins versus Trinidad, all the way down to the UFC, Diaz versus McGregor, Holly Holmes versus what's the name of that chick? I already forgot her name already. You know what I'm saying?
Ronda Rousey.
Where do we place this at in combat sports as the greatest? I mean, because the guy that knocked out James Curlin, what was the name of him? What was we had him on Leaving the Ring? I don't remember the guy's name. The Japanese fighter.
Nobody thought that guy, you know. Well, I mean,
he dropped Curlin on a jab. Yeah.
Yeah.
What is the bigger upset?
Well, James dropped himself in the sauna. I mean, he dropped like 23 pounds in like 2 days or like in a day or something. Ridiculous. What's a greater accomplishment? Coming out of nowhere, as Dominic Wade basically is.
Right.
Beating, say, you know, he beats Golovkin. Or
who's considered
like
a god
Douglas
right now?
Was a ne'er-do-well. You know, he was a Buster Douglas.
He's the Rams
Jr.
of L.A.
Kind of a contender.
Yeah. I mean, Gennady Golovkin is the Rams of L.A. He's a Dodger of L.A. He doesn't even come from L.A., but he's been labeled as the dude. He's the Mexican of all Mexicans at this point right now. So if Dominic Wade send him back across the border, what does that send him at? What is he at?
That's funny. Is it wrong that it bothers me that people keep saying he's, you know, he's Mexican?
I don't think so.
I don't know why, but it bothers me. People are like, oh, he's Mexican. He's like, he's the next Chavez Sr. Like, he's not Mexican, you know? So I guess maybe boxing is like the one sport.
It's flattering. I'm going to tell you right now, it's very flattering that there's other cultures that, because, okay, because here's the thing.
But I don't think of the Mexican style as just standing there brawling.
We talked about this last week.
Right.
And we talked about this last week.
Oh, I fight like Mexicans. Like, go fuck yourself. No, you don't.
Right.
You know.
But, you know, let me look, see if I can find it right now. On our, you know, Leaving the Ring Gmail. Somebody asked me, why don't you think fighters, let me see if I can find it real quick, because I don't want to fuck up the question. Because it was along the line, why don't you think people try to align themselves as being Puerto Rican style fighters, or this is the Puerto Rican style? And, hold on.
Hector Camacho.
Yeah, and
I think people think of that Puerto Rican style as that, don't they? Or at least I kind of do. I think of it more as Cuban.
And I responded back.
Even
Tito's style. Right.
Bounced around.
Well, Tito's style was not a new style that we saw. It was an engaging entertainment. And I said that. I said, here's the thing is that Rodolfo Gomez, same thing. Very engaging. He was the original Mexican assassin, if you remember that. He was blowing everybody out. Salvador Sanchez gets in with them, moved up in weight. No, Gomez moved up in weight. and fought his style, and boom, that's when Salvador Sanchez finally got his, like, to me, he got his props, the recognition of who he was. And I said, I don't know,
yeah,
you know, because maybe because there's more champions in Mexico that people recognize or see, because there's a lot of great Puerto Rican. I mean, Miguel Cotto is known for a guy that goes for the Gusco as well, you know. So that is a good question. I'm trying to find the email right now. I'm sorry, man, because we get a lot of emails, and I should highlight the emails that we get on certain questions and stuff like that. And these are great questions too, folks. And I apologize for the people that do send the emails for us, and I never bring it up on the radio because some of you guys, dude, you guys ask some really hardcore, difficult questions.
Do some email sessions.
We should.
Well,
we really should.
If it's not marketing. I mean, you look at Mexico, look at the marketing, you know, and Triple G is kind of a star, not in, you know, it's not a coincidence that he's a good-looking white guy, you know. Canelo, a guy they've pushed, looks like a white guy, a red-headed, pale, freckled Mexican. You know, he's not that
scary. He doesn't fight like a Mexican.
He's so impressed, you know what I mean? But he looks like a white guy. And so I think between, you know, why are Mexicans lauded more than Puerto Ricans is that, you know, of the two, like, Latin, you know, groups, I think Mexicans can be marketed as closer. Like, look at Julio Cesar Chavez Sr. He's Mexican-looking, but he's kind of pale-skinned, you know, short, straight hair. You know, he's marketable. It's kind of close enough to it that you can imagine you're him, which I think is a big part of the work. Vicarious living, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I'm looking for it right now, and I'm still looking for it. Because I don't want to mess up. It was a great question. And you know what's funny? I was like, hey, I'm going to ask this question on the show, and I just completely forgot about it, and I'm searching for it. Anyways, Fight Fans, I think we need to do exactly what Montoya just said right now. We need to do a show where we answer a lot of the emails from Leaving the Ring, because we get tons of emails asking tons of questions to be mentioned, and because we have so much to talk about, it's never addressed. So anyways, Fight Fans, call in 347-215-7598. Don't forget, every Monday we got the next round with Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya. Every Tuesday, in the Square Circle with Felipe Leon, who didn't do this last week because of the fact that he is in L.A. He's taking care of some stuff. He's going to be going live tomorrow night on the two-minute round, all-female dedicated boxing show. He's going to have all the fighters that are going to be fighting on the Gennady Golovkin Wade card on the show. So he's going to be interviewing them, talking about the fights that's going to be happening on Saturday night. And Full Court Press is coming back. They had a layoff here for a little bit. They're going to be coming back on Friday night fights. I mean, Friday night here on Leaving the Ring. And Leaving the Ring is always Wednesday nights here with myself, Mr. Birdie Man, Gabriel Montoya, and Never Snitch 97 Rough. I'm still looking for the goddamn email, man. I'm stuck on that email. I'm telling you, I want to see that email. Anyways, but hey, man, as always, brother, because your leg is hurting, you had an operation, if people don't know that.
Well, thank
Montoya
you,
had
sir.
An operation.
Yeah.
He was being a mule.
I did.
He was
I'm
mule.
Becoming a man.
Yeah, you're being a mule for Felipe Leon from Mexico, and you thought you were going to be all kinds of kilos over and stuff, and it just didn't work out. You got infected. You got an operation. It don't want to look bad and stuff like that. Mr. 420 himself, the Burning Man.
Thanks.
Anyways, like I said, right, every Monday night. Yeah, every Monday night, The Last Dragon, Steve Kim, and the Burning Man, Gabriel Montoya. On the next, I cannot find this, and this is killing me.
You're not
going to
find it,
be certain. Dude, terrible. Luis Garcia, we're going to have to schedule him because 7:30, dude, it's just too goddamn late. You know, we just want to ask you, but maybe 5 minutes of questions. Yeah.
Dinner.
5 minutes of questions. You know. Yeah. And then we're going to be done. But anyways, we can always find that out. There's still about, another month out before the fight happens. No, not even a month out. We got, 3 weeks? May 7th and stuff, you know. But anyways, okay. All right, brothers. Well, hey, guys, everybody that called in, tune in, and guys that are holding, hey, have a great night. We'll talk to you guys next week, or you guys call in to the next round, And you guys can ask your questions over there because Steve and Montoya will answer those questions, and they will answer the questions on Twitter. If you want to ask those questions on leave it in Gmail, absolutely go set it. We're going to do our thing. You know, we're going to do that. We got to do that. We should do that.
Yeah, I think that's good.
For five
fans. I think that's good.
Yeah.
We should do a segment.
Yep, cool. Absolutely. Okay, guys. As always, don't drink and drive because you will spill your beer. Here, Dave Duenas, 97 Rough, the Birdie Man, Gabriel Montoya. We're out.
Peace.
For years and years, heating has meant boilers, and boilers have meant breakdowns. Over here and over here. Anything but music to your ears. At Fisher Future Heat, we create state-of-the-art home heating systems that we fit, then you forget, with no annual servicing needed and a huge 10-year guarantee. In short, we engineer common sense. Search Fisher Future Heat today. Fisher Future Heat. The future is electric.